2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
Taco Tuesday, Daily Fantasy NASCAR podcast, presented to you by DFSArmy.com. I'm your host, Taco, and I'm here with Brady Miller. Will you say hello, Brady?
I absolutely will. Hello, this is Brady Miller. How are you, Taco?
Oh, doing fantastic. Ready to have another fun week at a short track.
Yeah, we're going short track racing again. A little longer than last week, but still fast, short, tight. And it'll be should be a good race if it's anything like Bristol was.
It seems like it's a lot different than Bristol this week. The DNF percentage last week was only 63% of people finished within 10 laps of the lead. And that number here is 93%.
Yeah, definitely a lot less variance on this track, a lot less accident potential. For a couple reasons, it's a little longer of a track. It's not as tight as Bristol. And there's more room for error on the track in terms of just the extra 0.25 miles that goes around the track, and the track's a lot wider too. So, but it's still a fun track, man. It promotes good racing, side by side racing. So no matter what, it should at least be a fun race to watch.
It's always been one of my favorites as well. I mean, I always just like these shorter tracks for sure, but Richmond does give you a lot of freedom out there, and it seems like looking back over the last 3 or 4 years or so, we've seen some huge numbers put up. Looking back historically, Brad Keselowski and Matt Kenseth put up some of the craziest fantasy numbers that you'll ever see. Brad Keselowski scored 190 fantasy points, starting on the pole, leading all but 17 laps with 100 fast laps. And Matt Kenseth put up 188, starting second, leading 350 laps with 106 fast laps. So, just looking back historically, it seems like it's really hard to pass the leader here. It might possibly be or more likely than Bristol to be a single dominator race. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, if we go by history, definitely. The one concern, again, is how much the new downforce package is going to affect these cars, because Richmond is fast enough and it is wide enough for aerodynamics to play a big role in how these cars handle. But I do kind of expect, just kind of based on what we've seen so far with the lower downforce package, that passing the leader is still going to be really tough to do. And I think there's probably going to be a car get out front and dominate in pretty spectacular fashion like we've seen in the last couple of years.
So you're probably not going to want to set the new domination station lineup generator to have anywhere from like 3 to 4 dominators. You're probably going to want, you know, 1 or 2.
Yeah, I agree with that. I know they revamped it this week, so it should be even better than it was last week. But yeah, I'm probably going to have mine set to 1 or 2. Or, you know, I think the... I think 1 or 2 is probably what I'm going with.
Looking back, again, historically at some of the highest fantasy point production, you actually see a lot of people start in the back that work their way up and either win or finish in the top 3. I think a lot of that might just be due to variance and qualifying here, and people like Austin Dillon this week starting in the back, like we saw a couple years ago, Casey Kane do that, and Jimmy Johnson as well. Given how this week is, just looking overall, I guess we'll just go through all the, you know, the plays and get to these guys. But as far as place differential, it's a little bit more important this week. But it seems like a lot of the guys that people will be targeting will be very, very chalk. So how are you going to go about that with there being really just a bunch of people in that like 14 to 20 range, everyone's going to attack, and then obviously the one very chalky Austin Dillon.
Yeah, it's going to be tough this week. I think our one kind of takeaway from some of the research we did this week is that there is going to be probably one dominator that really takes control of this race. I mean, it's happened for the last couple years, and usually, based on what we've seen, that dominator, that highest point score is going to come from the top five starting position. So I think it's worthwhile to look at drivers in that area as dominators. Other than that, it's going to come down to me to what we see on practice tomorrow compared to what the drivers have done at this track in the past. This is a pretty consistent track in terms of if you have a good history here, you're probably going to have a good race barring any troubles. It's a consistent track that hasn't gone through a lot of track type changes in the last year, couple years. The biggest change, obviously, is the new downforce package. So I think we want to look at those guys in that kind of bee's nest, like you said, 12 to 14 range. But we want to look at the ones that have had success in the past here and have shown speed in 2017 and in this particular race weekend.
Practice is definitely going to be interesting, but if you look at ownership percentages over the last few weeks, and especially last week, it seems like practice times pretty much correlate directly with ownerships. How do you feel practice times will, or do you think that it's better just to go off of practice times this week, or would you potentially fade some people? And when looking at the fast laps and 10 laps, how are you attacking those in practice?
You know what? It's hard to gauge anything based off 10 laps yet. As at the time of recording this, we've only really seen the first practice and qualifying. And in the first practice, I mean, maybe 10 drivers took a 10-lap average. There was a lot of on and off track action, so we didn't get a good sense of who's got great long run speed. But I do definitely tend to lean towards single lap speed here. Just because it's not a track that necessarily promotes major tire wear. I mean, it's definitely going to be a factor, but not to a big extent. But yeah, we definitely have seen a consistent correlation between single lap third practice time and ownership percentages. And when it comes to fading, I think it's going to come down to how we feel about that driver. Like I said, and their performance so far in 2017 and their historical performance at Richmond. So, you know, if a guy like, it's hard to pick one right off the top of my head, but, you know, if David Reagan or whatever, all of a sudden, you know, posts a seventh single lap speed tomorrow, a seventh place single lap speed, I'm still going to be comfortable fading him because he doesn't have a tremendous track record here. But again, like a guy like Ryan Newman, who I talked about in my midweek article on DFSArmy.com, Ryan Newman's got a tremendous track record at Richmond, or at least a very serviceable one for a guy of his caliber. So if he posts a really fast practice time, then it's, you know, it's going to be harder to fade a guy like that.
Yeah, I forgot what I was about to say next, but one last thing. One last thing about the track here. Go over what you feel will be the situation when it comes to the lines that people run. Obviously, that was the talk of last week with them adding the sticky grip to the bottom, the VHT. Obviously, they're not going to be doing that this week, but which line will people be running and which ones will develop as the race goes?
Well, as we saw in first practice, it kind of just seemed everybody was running that really low line. Except Ricky Stenhouse Jr., who was kind of a couple lanes up the track, and he was finding speed up there. A couple other guys tried it in qualifying and didn't have the success that Stenhouse was having. But that being said, I think that shows us that there definitely is going to be at least two lines. And in the past, as recently as last year, we started to see towards the end of runs that high line coming in. That's never really been at Richmond before. And with time, that's going to come in more and more and more. So I think some of the more, you know, bottom feeder friendly drivers are going to try to keep it on that bottom line. But I think you're going to see some of those outside lane guys like Stenhouse and like Larson and like Kasey Kahne try to work in that higher line. And that line's just going to go higher and higher and higher as the race continues. So I think we'll probably see a single lane to one and a half lanes for the first segment and maybe the first two segments. But as we wear on to the second half of this race, I think we're going to see two lines work in. And I think you're going to see some guys finding speed on the second, third, and maybe even a fourth line.
Okay, so on to the picks here. We're going to try to keep it a lot shorter than last pod.
Yeah, we're at 3 hours through two podcasts now, so.
Woo! Yeah, okay, so Kyle Busch, 10,600, last week's darling, got all the ownership in the world, ended up crashing out, and didn't really look as spectacular as his practice times had shown. How do you feel about him this week? We don't really know much about the practice times yet, obviously, but we assume that JGR is going to keep bringing the heat. He's starting 7th, so he's kind of in a cluster there of potential dominators. Of course, he's a dominator week to week here. Has a really, really, really solid track history. So, seems like your everyday, you know, Kyle Busch play. You like him if he dominates, but if he's too chalky, maybe get off of him.
Yeah, this goes back to something you said last week, and it was no matter what, Kyle Busch is, there's no circumstance where he's not going to be chalky. And that's because there's really no circumstance where he's not going to be an attractive play. He didn't show as much as I thought he would last week. He got some damage from that first incident, and then I think that slowed him a bit, but he was still making up ground. He was fighting for a top five when he finally wrecked out for good, which is a good indicator. The JGR Collective has shown a little more speed this week. You know, Matt Kenseth is on the pole, which is a really interesting turn of events for that camp. But I still like Kyle Busch this week, and I know that doesn't shock anyone because I towed him every week. But he's probably my top play for probably the fourth week in a row. I really like Kyle Busch this week. He's got such a great track record here. He hasn't pulled out a victory in recent memory, but starting 7th, I do think he'll be in the top 5 if he avoids an incident. I think he'll lead some laps, and I, like you said, I think he's got some dominator potential here. This week just reeks of Kyle Busch's coming out party for 2017.
I hate saying that he's due, but I mean, he's the Vegas favorite, and well, he just feels due. So
absolutely, and we'll keep an eye on him in practice. If he shows any amount of speed at all, I mean, we're going to see that correlation again, and he's going to be over-owned again. So it's a tempting fade even, but I think we'll talk about it more as the weekend progresses and we see more practice times and get a better feel for how the weekend's going to play out.
All right, so Kevin Harvick, 10,400. Vegas not liking him this week. His odds are 8-1 compared to Kyle Busch's 5-1. But he has a pretty good track record here. He hasn't finished any worse than 14th since 2013. One of the best driver ratings of anyone in the field, obviously, because he's just one of the best drivers in the entire field week to week. Led the most laps on the year by one lap over Martin Truex Jr. Starting 6th, so right there with Kyle Busch. Seems sort of like the same play, just not as good at practice times, and I guess Harvick just hasn't looked as good as he usually does this season. Kind of the same as last week again with Harvick?
Yeah, it's kind of that middle-of-the-road play, I think, and it's different than it has been through like the last 3 years. He's had such a dominant car, but this year that's just not the case. I mean, even his teammate Clint Bowyer has looked a little more impressive than him. I like Kevin Harvick as a pivot off Kyle Busch. He starts a position higher, but he's $200 cheaper. A really comparable track record since 2013. I mean, it's 107 to 103 track rating. I mean, if you kind of look at all their stats across the board on the cheat sheet that Taco puts out every week, they're really kind of mirror images of each other. The only real glaring difference so far is Kyle Busch practices 8th quick in first practice. Harvick was 16th, so I think we'll see Harvick move up that board as the weekend progresses. I don't love Harvick as a, in my mind, I don't think he's going to be a real contender this race. But from a fantasy perspective, I think he is a decent play if you're trying to get off what I believe will be the Kyle Busch chalk. But again, that's all going to come down to what we see in practice.
That's exactly what I'm thinking here. So onto the second Kyle Larson, starting back in 18th this week, but he's just looked so ridiculously good and kept that up last week with a very, very impressive Bristol where he led lap after lap after lap. Almost messed it up at the very end there with the pit penalty, but end up soaring back up to the top. How chalky is this man going to be? He's got to be just all of the chalk. Everyone looking at the game log, or all the game logs will see, holy crap, he's pretty much top two, like, every single week. And he leads a million laps. I don't know, like, I guess I like him a lot starting in 18th. That really, really increases his value this week, and he'll probably increase it for everyone else. But he actually leads all of NASCAR in stage points by over a dozen.
Yeah, he's been incredible this year. But this week, for me, I'm kind of in the middle with him for a couple reasons. Like you said, he's going to be super chalky. Like, starting 18th for a guy who finishes second every single week, no matter the track type, he's going to be super chalky. The thing that puts me off him a little is that he's never looked that impressive at Richmond.
Outside of last year.
Last year he got his first top five, or top ten even. He finished second in the fall race, I believe. Before that, he's never looked really impressive. That said, I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that when he first started back in 2014, there was only really the bottom line at Richmond. And through his first couple years of Cup, he couldn't run the bottom line. He always went to the top line, even if it was not feasible to do so. As the time has progressed and that Richmond track has got a little worn, the higher line is getting a little more feasible, and I think that really benefited him last year, and I think it's going to benefit him again this year, especially with the super fast race cars that he's brought. So again, it comes back to that thing of, you know, like Kyle Busch, he's going to be super high owned, but I still think he's a good play. So it comes down to a DFS strategy position. Do you fade him hoping something happens? Or do you have enough confidence in his ability to get into the top five where he's starting 18th to hit value? I think he probably does. I'm kind of leaning more to trying to go overweight on the field with Kyle Larson. But again, it's definitely worth considering fading him depending on how you think the rest of the field's going to react and how much stock you put into his track history outside of last fall.
It's important to remember that last fall we saw Kyle Larson just go Super Saiyan, and this track kind of appeared right on his, like, tirade after he got his first win of just, like, excellent top, like, two or three finishes, and there's really an argument to be made that that streak has just continued on to this season. It seems like he's just a completely different driver now, and has a case to be among, like, the top five, top seven drivers moving forward.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think he's going to be a staple inside the top five all year and probably for the next 15 years. But like I said, this pick for me comes down to your opinion of it's just how much you value his track history versus the ownership he's going to have is going to be super, super high.
I think it's entirely an ownership play here because Larson's just awesome week to week. It's just, he's going to be at least 30, if not up to like 40% ownership, just depending on what his practice times are.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. But again, starting 18th, if he reaches the top five, I mean, there's 13 points from there, leads a couple laps, plus, you know, a top five point. It's easy for him to hit 7X this week. So certainly an attractive play.
And one more thing on Larson real quick. With this being a much, much more predictable track than last week, do you think it's probably a little better to eat more chalk than last week, or definitely the next week at Talladega?
Yeah, I think this is the week to do it if we're going to do it. It's a low incident track. And for a driver like Larson, who's just kind of had a tremendous ability to avoid incident this year, I think it's probably a safe chalk play.
So 200 and cheaper. We have Joey Logano. Looked terrible in practice, but that was just practice one. Ended up qualifying fifth. Really, really nice track record here. The last six races, he's finished top 10 since winning in 2014. Him and Keselowski, kind of interesting cases week to week. They seem to pretty much always be there, but I guess Logano hasn't looked quite as good as you expect him to, pretty much week to week. Like, we always peg him for, like, a top three or four guy, but he's just kind of been chilling a little bit, as where Keselowski's been out there winning the races. How do you feel about Logano?
Logano's a weird play this week, I think. Starting fifth, there's definitely some better options that are starting farther back in the field. But Joey's got a pretty good track record here. Nothing super impressive, a win back in 14 since then, some top 10s and flirting with the top five. Like you said, he didn't look super, super impressive in practice, but he turned that around for qualifying. And he actually, I think, had won the first two qualifying sessions, fell off a little when it came time to qualify for the top 12. But he's rolling on fifth, like I said, kind of needs to dominate a little in order to be a valuable play. Don't think he's stronger than Matt Kenseth so far this weekend. Don't think he's stronger than Truex Jr. Not sure he's stronger than Kyle Busch. So I'm kind of leaning towards the Logano fade this week unless he shows us something in practice.
I'm with you there. That'll do it for the 10,000 over guys. We have last week's winner, Jimmy Johnson, at 9,900. Starting 17th. What is up with Jimmy Johnson? Like, every win he gets, it seems to just be complete bullshit.
That's what they do, man. It's two races in a row that have been really, really unusual. Texas with the new track surface, no real quantifiable practice before that weekend. And then Bristol with all the rain and the VHT or whatever it was on the bottom lane of the track. Chad Knaus just figures out something that nobody else in the field figures out, and they go and win the race. I don't think there'll be much of that this week. There's not a whole lot of uncertainty going into this weekend outside of how viable the higher lanes of this racetrack will be. But I've eaten crow on Jimmy Johnson for the last 2 weeks, so I'm hesitant to say go low-owned on him, but I probably will anyway. Of that kind of bee's nest of 14 to 18, he's probably my least favorite play there. Has never really excelled in Richmond by Jimmy Johnson standards. A 91 driver rating since 13, which is super low for a guy like him. Doesn't lead a whole lot of laps here. And only kind of squeaks into the top five at the end of the race, if he does at all. So I'm comfortable for the third week in a row kind of being off Jimmy Johnson a little, but I'm also ready to eat crow on Monday morning again for the third week in a row.
Yeah, I agree. He also didn't look very good in practice. I did have him a lot last week, so I'm not, like, mad at him or anything. It just, like, it never looks like he deserves his victories anymore. It looks like he just slides in there at the end.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, I would get used to that for the next couple years until he just hang it up. Jimmy Johnson and Chad Knaus are just on a different level than anyone in terms of their ability to manipulate the rest of the field to their advantage. But for that to work, there needs to be some sort of turbulence. And I don't think there is that this week. So we'll try fading him again from my perspective. But like I said, he could show something in practice, and that's going to be a caveat for everyone we talk about. You got to keep an eye on practice 2 and 3. Keep your eye on the Slack forums, because we'll definitely be talking about practice 2 and 3 as they unfold. And keep an eye on the Xfinity race too, because there's some Monster Energy drivers in that this week too. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, we've definitely seen the Xfinity races over the last few weeks. With Larson winning a few weeks back and then him dominating the race, and Eric Jones winning last week and him dominating until he crashed, it seems like Xfinity seems to be setting the bar for some of these tracks. Or maybe it's a smallish sample size, and maybe we need to go back to just Kyle Busch leading every lap, so it doesn't really help anybody.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird. how Xfinity races sometimes can set the stage for a driver to just completely obliterate the field on Sunday, and sometimes it doesn't seem to have any effect at all. This week, Kyle Larson's in the Xfinity race, Ty Dillon, Ryan Blaney, Austin Dillon, and Daniel Suarez are all suiting up for both races this weekend. So keep an eye on how they do, and because there definitely is some correlation on some weeks, and I think this will probably be a week that there is some.
Kind of interesting, because both Blaney and Larson have actually skipped this race in the Xfinity Series the last 4 years. And that is something I did add to the cheat sheet this week, was just some Xfinity history. For looking at some of these guys, like Erik Jones, Suarez, Chase Elliott, that we don't have a whole lot of information on, it's good to have something to look back on, but we need to get going here. Brad Keselowski at probably his cheapest price all year, it seems like, at $9,700. He's another one of those guys right there with Logano and Jimmy Johnson that had slower practice times, but again, we haven't seen all the practices yet and everything. He's starting in that just slurry of dominators, starting in the teens, starting 15th, and has a fairly good track record here. Also won in 2014, along with his Penske teammate, Logano. Kind of seems like the same play as Logano, just a little farther back. Maybe if, I don't know, it's like Keselowski just not terribly interesting outside of ownership, although I feel like I should be into him more. I'm just not really feeling him as much this week. I don't know.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. I think I'm a little higher on him than you seem to be. I like him as a play this week for a couple reasons, but mostly starting 15th is really attractive for a driver of his caliber and his ability to dominate here. I mean, you go back to that race we talked about earlier where he just destroyed the field. I believe that was a night race, and night races tend to be a little more follow the leader than a day race that this one will be. So I don't expect domination at that level at all this week, but I mean, the potential to do it is there, just based on history. Keselowski doesn't have to do a whole lot to hit value. A top five finish will pretty much do it for him. Maybe a top three to be safe with some lead laps. And for a guy that could lead a big chunk of laps, again, depending on what we see in practice, I think he's a really good play. But again, if Joey Logano and Brad Keselowski's starting positions were swapped, I'd say that, you know, I'd say the opposite thing for both guys. So again, it comes down to a strategy play more than a how I think this person will perform. But I do think Keselowski has a good a chance as any, if not the best chance, to dominate in this little cluster of potential dominators from the 14 to 18 range.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, that is actually a good point what you're saying. 9,700, really cheap for him. Starting 15th, even if he just goes up to, like, 5th, he'll probably still be really good. Very affordable. I don't know, I guess I just have, like, a hunch or something. But I try not to listen to those. I'll try not to let those come through. A guy I always have a hunch about every week, Chase Elliott, 9,500. Just so frustrating. When I finally go in, when the field is off of him for a change, he looks like crap, and he looked like crap last week. This is a track that he has historically kind of looked like crap at. On the NASCAR Sprint Cup, Monster Energy Cup, whatever circuit, he's not looked very good, but in the Xfinity Series, he's fucking dominated. Yeah. So, very interesting case. He's starting 14th, 9,500, kind of the same price he's been at recently. I don't see the domination there exactly yet, but he could definitely move up and chill in like third place and be fine.
Yeah, I think so. You know, I'm still not, despite Jimmy Johnson winning the last couple of races, I'm still not sold on Hendrick being on the same level as Penske and the Fords in general. And maybe even the Toyotas now, because they seem to have found some speed. The exception to that up until last week has been Chase Elliott, who's been really strong. But he didn't show much at a short track last week. This track is way different than Bristol, but it's still a short track that he has struggled at in the past. His driver rating since he's come to this level has been really abysmal, 72.9, which is, you know, less than Eric Almirola, for example. Really, really poor, average running position of just inside the top 20, 19.3, never led a lap at Richmond before in his three starts here. Just not somebody I'm super, super interested in, but I can see why some people are going to chase him. No pun intended. He has shown up on tracks that he hasn't in the past so far this year, and this could be a situation for that. But again, to do that, you're playing a hunch, and that's kind of the theme of the show, is not to play hunches. So I'm going to be off Chase Elliott this week until he can, show me a little more domination than he has in the so far this season. Because as good as he's run in 2017, he hasn't really led significant laps. He's always kind of flirting around in the top five, but never really out front. 169 laps led so far this season, which is kind of middle of the road for those top level guys. So I'm off Chase Elliott this week, barring any significant stuff happening in practice.
Yeah, and a lot of those lead laps were at the Daytona 500 that, obviously it wouldn't matter at all compared to a track like this. But by the way, for every Chase Elliott pun going forward, I'm going to have to bill you. But what do you think about his Xfinity dominance? Would you put a lot of stock into that?
Not really, just because it hasn't shown up. His dominance in Xfinity was, in 2014 and 2015, and in the two races he ran in the Monster Energy Series in 2016, he looked really poor. He actually ran this race back in 2015 as kind of one of his five preview races that he ran in the 25 car for Hendrick in the fifth Hendrick car, and he ran 16th. So he's dominated here in the Xfinity race, and then since then has not been able to replicate that in the Monster Energy Series. So I don't put too much stock into that.
Moving down to our defending champion here, Denny Hamlin at 9,300, has really looked bad this season, kind of along with Kenseth, like kind of a head-scratching kind of thing we're seeing out of him. Only 30 fast laps on the year, like that's ridiculous for having a JGR car and Hamlin being Hamlin. Like it's so weird, but what do you make of him? He had really good practice times, but of all your average dominator kind of guys, he has the lowest odds to win. Starting in 16th, so he's right there with the slurry of people. What do you make about the interesting case of Denny Hamlin this year?
Denny Hamlin, outside, if we take away 2017 as a whole, coming into this race, if this was the first race of 2017 and Denny Hamlin was starting 16th, I'd be all in on him because he is really good at Richmond. It's his hometown track, if he has one at all. He's a Virginia native, so and he's looked good here since in the last three races. So I really like Denny Hamlin as a play if we ignore 2017, but he's just looked so poor so far in 2017, and I don't have a good reason for it. So I'm hesitant to go all in on him, but I do think he'll probably go under-owned just based on that 76.4 driver rating in 2017 and just an inability to produce any results. The one stat that sticks out for 2017 that gives me some hope for him is 347 quality passes, which is in the upper echelon for guys that are struggling, I guess. So he is able to get around cars. He's a good race car driver, and I just think something's off with their race cars right now, and it's just a matter of time before they figure that out. I think I'll go overweight on Denny Hamlin this week. But again, tail with caution, because there definitely is something up with the 11 camp. And I don't have anything to tell me that it's going to be any different this week.
I think he's possibly going to be a pivot off of the next two guys that we're going to talk about. So I'm kind of with you. I want to go a little bit overweight on him, but not too much, just because the fast laps haven't been there. And at a short track at 400 laps, fast laps are just so important. That's where most of your fantasy scoring actually comes from. Twice as important than lead laps, and actually lead laps and fast laps kind of correlate here, but unlike Bristol, you're going to see the faster cars kind of get more of these fast laps than the randomness that was Bristol.
Yeah. For sure.
Moving on to what seems like the best play this week. 9100, Martin Truex Jr., just an absolutely head-scratching play. He's been awesome so far this year. Has led the most laps. Looked amazing last week at a short track, which he's never looked good at before. Looked good here last race. Fastest in practice. Starting third. Like, why is he so cheap? I don't understand this at all.
It's really bizarre, and I think there must be going off of historical performance, which really even hasn't been that bad. In 2016, he finished third and ninth, which is fine. And that $9,100 figure came out before qualifying, so that doesn't even make sense. He's starting third, so that will push his ownership down maybe a tinge, but $9,100 is just bizarre for a guy who's been, you know, along with Kyle Larson, kind of the cream of the crop in 2017. But yeah, like you said, I don't like him starting third, but Furniture Row and Penske have the fastest cars so far this season. I think Martin Truex has the best chance to dominate, probably other than Matt Kenseth. So, it's going to be so hard to get off him, I think, because it's really easy for him to hit value. Even if, you know, if he gets out front in that first segment and then stays in the top five for the rest of the day, value's hit. And at 9,100, I mean, it's going to be really hard to stay off him.
Actually, I think, I forgot about this idea I had that, I think Truex is lower owned because something's telling me that they're using ownership from the previous weeks to determine the prices of people. Because if you look on further down, some of the guys that were higher owned, like Di Benedetto last week, are really bumped up in price, as were obviously better plays like McDowell and Cole Witt, who are lower owned, who did really well last week, got bumped down in price. So I think that might have something to do with it.
It could be. I mean, I don't know enough about DraftKings pricing system to comment on that, but whatever it is, it's bizarre. And like I said, it's just going to be so hard to get off him at $9,100.
And it will be very hard to get off of Matt Kenseth starting on the pole at one of his best tracks historically at $8,800.
Yeah, another really head-scratching price, I think, though. He hasn't looked really spectacular in 2017. From a fantasy perspective, I haven't been that offended by his performance in 2017 because he's either had trouble, some sort of head-scratching trouble, or he's run really poor, and then in the last 50 laps he just shows up in the top 10 and the top 5 and has trouble again, or he, like last week, he finishes it out. I'm hoping that's behind him this week. You know, he's got a fast car, obviously. He's got probably, like you said, his best track, a track that he knows how to lead on, a track that he knows how to win on. I think he's probably a good play, but this is something I really am going to have to analyze the last two practices to be confident, because I think there's a good chance that Martin Truex Jr. could beat him, you know, take the lead within the first 10 laps of this race, and then Matt Kenseth will do his, you know, vanish into the 20s and then reappear in the top 10 with 50 laps to go, that little routine he likes to do. So, you know, he's not a natural dominator, I don't think. And the only reason he's being considered is because he's starting first. But like I said, I think Martin Truex has as good as a chance as Matt Kenseth to dominate the first segment this week.
It seems like the obvious play is just to play them both.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you're going to see a lot of lineups.
You're going to tie with a lot of people if you do that.
Yeah, so, you know, that's definitely a play. It's not a play that I think I'm going to go with just based from, you know, from a strategy perspective. I'm probably going to be a little higher on Truex Jr. than Kenseth, but I still think having significant exposure to Kenseth isn't necessarily a bad idea.
Now, someone that keeps showing up week to week, and it's very hard to understand why, at $8,500, which is still a very high price for him, but it's starting to feel like the right price, Clint Bowyer, who just for some reason just shows up out of nowhere in the middle of races in like second or third place and just stays there for the rest of the race. What in the world do you make up of him? I mean, 85 driver rating looks really nice, kind of fast off of restarts, but other than that, it's really hard to point at what exactly he's been doing well outside of just holding on to his track position.
Yeah, it's strange. that's a great way to put it. He's doing really fantastic of job of holding the track position he has. I mean, if he gets good track position off a pit stop, he holds it. If he starts well, he holds it.
He's pulling a Ryan Newman.
That's right. But he hasn't been able to get out front, really. I don't think he's, you know, led any laps at all this year, despite being out front as much as he has. But that being said, I do kind of like him this week as kind of a sneaky...
Oh, I don't think he'll be sneaky anymore.
I'm not sure what to make of him. I think he's overpriced, and I think starting eighth isn't necessarily attractive for a guy who doesn't seem like he can lead laps. So I think he'll probably not be too high owned, but I could be wrong. But anyway, I'm going to have exposure to Clint Boyer. They were talking about in practice how his car is a lot better than his single lap speed is. I don't have any information to back that up other than Darrell Wallace talking about it. But you know, it's definitely got to keep an eye on this weekend because I do think they have shown speed. I do think Clint Boyer is going to win a race this year. And he's kind of I think this is a potential win for him, even if it's a long shot. Keep an eye on him in practice and kind of revisit. I'll talk about him in my article tomorrow because I haven't made up my mind on what to do with Clint Boyer this week.
Yeah, it's hard to know what to make of him and very hard to know what to make of Dale Earnhardt Jr. at one of the cheapest prices I've ever seen him at, $8,300. Just keeps going down. He looks like he doesn't care anymore. He's announced that he's retiring at the end of the season. Starting 12th. What do you do with him? Just avoid him? Like, is he Tony Stewart now?
I wouldn't go that far. Dale Earnhardt Jr. is going to win a race or two this season for sure.
I don't think so.
Nah, if you're
he's way too conservative now. Like, he doesn't do anything. He just kind of sits there. He's like, yeah, Jeff Gordon in his last season, just collecting some paychecks on his way out.
Yeah, but even Jeff Gordon won a race that in his last year. I think a lot more. I think Junior isn't out the door yet. I think a lot that has a lot to do with the quality of Hendrick cars. You know, Jimmy Johnson, like I said, he's won two races in a row, but those have been unusual circumstances where I don't think he had the fastest car in the field. He just had the best strategy and the best game plan. Dale Earnhardt Jr. doesn't have those strategies and those game plans, so it's not showing up in his performance. I don't like him this week, really. I will have exposure to him just based on his price. I mean, it's an elite car for $8,300. But there's a couple other plays we're going to talk about in a second that maybe I like a little more than him. So I'm going to match the field or go a little under on him if I can, just because it is going to be a weird week for him. You know, he's been in the news a lot. He always goes a little over-owned just based on his name, at least in the lower dollar tournaments. And I think with the fact that he's been in the news so much this week, he's probably going to go a little over-owned anyway because of the narrative aspect of it. What a story it would be if he won this race. But I don't think he will, and I don't think he's going to move up much from 12th. So match the fielder a little underweight for me.
Yeah, I think I'm just going to fade him. So
yeah, that's play too, I think.
After we gush about this next play, we're just going to kind of skip on down to the bottom here because we're going to be pushing an hour once again.
Yeah, we'll skim through.
How much do you love Erik Jones? Once again, he's bringing the heat right there with Martin Truex Jr. Furniture Row is obviously on to something. He's starting 20th, 8,100. He seems like just such an easy lock and load after he looked so amazing last week.
Yeah, this is the one of the obvious plays of the week, I think. He definitely has something, and I like him a lot better this week because he's starting 20th. He's got that place differential potential. He doesn't have to dominate to hit value, and I don't think he's a certified dominator yet, but he is going to be, just not yet. He's got some stuff to figure out, but he's one of the most impressive rookies we've seen in the last 2 years, even as, you know, compared to Chase Elliott. I think he's as good or better than Chase was last year, and he's got arguably a top three or four fast car every week. The problem is I don't think he's going to beat Martin Truex Jr. if they have the same car, if all things are equal. But for $8,100, starting 20th, a guy that should be in the top five just based on the race car he has, it seems like an easy play.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a little bit harder for him to move up, maybe than we'd think, just because of the lack of DNFs here. I mean, there are so many quality drivers to jam into the top five or seven, and you've got that huge slurry of just amazing drivers starting ahead of him. It's hard to see him just walk around like the likes of Larson and Johnson, Keselowski, Elliott, Truex.
Yeah, it'll be tough, but and it's another thing, we've said it over and over and again, but keep an eye on practice. But I think those cars are a step above the field. I forget the actual number. I don't know if I have it up on my screen or not. Yeah, but Truex was beating the field in first practice by 0.2, which is, and
Nasty.
those 0.2 were above his teammate Erik Jones. So they're going to build whatever they have in Martin Truex's car into Jones's car. I think he's going to have a super, super fast car. I think he'll probably get into the top 10 pretty quickly. Like you said, it's going to be harder to pass as he goes forward, but I think he'll probably be in the top 10 for most of the day and probably end up competing for his first top five of the year or his second top five of the year.
Think you finished fifth once.
Yeah, so I really like Erik Jones this week, and it's just seems like it seems too easy. But be careful with that because the Truex, Kenseth, Jones, Austin Dillon is going to be the core for just about everybody's lineup. That core is going to be super, super, super chalky. Probably the chalkiest core we've seen all year. So be careful with that.
Yeah, definitely. You're not gonna do much there. Just play it in cash, and maybe it's just hard to get away from the chalk at a race like this. So we've been fooled one time, and it's shame on you, Ryan Blaney. Are we gonna get fooled again? Ryan Blaney starting second. It just seems like you fade him, but he made me eat so much shit when he dominated starting second
Yeah.
at Martinsville, right?
No, it was Texas,
No,
maybe?
Texas. Yeah, Texas.
Yeah.
That was an intermediate track where he seems to be doing a little better, but he was third in practice behind Jones and Truex. Obviously, we'll see if that continues, but this is like I need like a trigger warning for this. Ryan Blaney starting in second. I mean, I'm obviously not going to fade him 100% again, but it seems like a play you want to avoid. But gah.
From my personal perspective, and this isn't a play I would recommend everybody do, but I'm probably going to fade him 100% and eat crow if I have to. I still don't think, I think that race was
Crow
an
tastes like
outlier.
shit.
I think that race was an outlier. I don't think that's something that's going to be common. He had a super fast car that weekend. And even then, he didn't win the race. So even with the fastest car in the field, he found trouble. I'm just not convinced that Ryan Blaney is at that dominator spot yet in his career. I think he's got a little ways to go. I don't think he'll have the fastest car, and I'm sure this sounds exactly what I said before Texas.
It's the
But
smart play. It's just sometimes, bleh,
it's
sometimes
hard.
crap happens.
That's right. But again, like I said, my feelings about him have not changed based on that one race. I think, like I said, I think that race was an outlier. I think Ryan Blaney is a good driver. He's just not a consistent dominator yet. But again, this could be a Jimmy Johnson situation where on Monday I record the Brady Eats Crow for an hour podcast, and I'm prepared to do that.
Oh my gosh. Jamie McMurray, who's pretty much the exact same play every week. Starting top 10, and he'll probably finish top 10, but not go anywhere. He's starting 10th.
He's kind of got that Clint Boyer thing going on. He sticks around, but I think he's a little too hard on equipment. He's really fast at the start of runs and then trickles off
Yeah.
as the run progresses and kind of flattens out where he started. Not really good at gaining track position, just maintaining it or losing a couple positions based off it. His saving grace right now is that his pit crew's been good and he's been qualifying well, so he's always kind of had a top 8 to 12 finishing position, but hasn't. I don't know if he's led a lap at all this year, and if
No.
he, it's
Oh,
been nothing.
he led 13 laps.
Yeah, so,
Oh,
and I'm
those were
done.
at Daytona.
Yeah, so I'm happy to fade him this year. He hasn't shown me anything yet.
I'm always happy to fade Kurt Busch 7700. He's great at this track, but
Yeah,
he's
Kurt Busch, I mean, he hasn't.
no fast laps this year. Like 18. That's all he's got in the entire year.
Yeah.
It was the same as last year. Last year, he didn't put up any more than 5 fast laps in a race, ever.
Yeah, I said this last week. I don't remember where. But I don't think Kurt Busch has taken to this package at all. I don't think he likes the low downforce, and I think it's affecting him greatly. Thank God for him, he won Daytona, so it's not that big of a deal yet. But again, I think more than anything, that Daytona win kind of lowers that team's motivation to get better right now. And they may be doing some experimental stuff for the rest of the team, because he is noticeably slower than Harvick and Bowyer. So I wouldn't be surprised if they were trying some stuff in that car, and just based on that, I'm happy to fade him.
Oh, me too. Casey Kane starting a very awkward spot in 19th, right behind all the other elite drivers. Not interesting?
A little interesting, based on his... This is probably Casey Kane's best track, and I think his last win came at this track.
I think it was Atlanta.
You might be right.
I think Atlanta's his best track, but nonetheless, yeah. He's really good here.
Yeah, he's good here. It's just, again, it comes down to that Hendrick thing we've talked about a lot. I don't think Hendrick's all there yet, and Casey Kane hasn't been all there since 2012, probably. I think Casey Kane's on his way out of Hendrick. This is probably his last year there. But the only thing that makes this play attractive, and this can be said for Kurt Busch too, is elite equipment starting 19th, you know, for Kane starting 19th, and he's in the mid-7,000s, which is always worth taking a look at. But again, I don't think it's worth significant exposure at this point, unless practice shows us something. And he was, as much as you can take from it, fastest 10-lap average in first practice. But
out of
not
all
enough.
Three people that posted 10 yeah, not averages.
Took 10 laps, so keep an eye on that. But for the most part, I'm probably middle-of-the-road interest, if under-owned interest.
100% Austin Dillon, right, starting last?
Yeah, I mean, there's just no downside to playing Austin Dillon. It's going to be weird. He's going to be super, super high-owned. To hit value, what's he got to do? Finish 25th, maybe? Something like that. So I'm fine with, you know, plugging him in at a super high percentage.
Yeah, I mean, there's not really much that needs to be said about him. Starting, he's really cheap for who he is, I guess. He's been around low sevens all year. But just starting last, that's like a guaranteed 10, if not 15, place differential, and that'll do you.
Yeah, his worst career finish here is 27th a couple times. He's finished 27th here three times. If he does that, and, you know, has even if he can squeak out 5 fast laps, he's still going to hit 4 times value. And if that's worst-case scenario, I mean, you know. What do you do?
He'll get 29 fantasy points if he finishes 27th.
Yeah. A couple fast laps, maybe. That's pretty...
Yep.
If that's worst-case scenario, then he's obviously a cash game lock. He'll be super high-owned in cash games, if not in 70s, maybe. Higher than that. And
we should be like 80 or 90, but...
Yeah, and in GPPs, he'll be above 50, above 60, probably close in the 70s even, maybe, so... Going to be hard to avoid him.
No one's going to ever go in the 70s, actually. I think he'll be like 50%.
You think? Yeah, so it's going
I've
to
never
be...
seen anyone above 60 ever.
Yeah, well, if it's going to happen, this will be the week. But again, I think it's safe to go. How high would you go on Austin Dillon? Like, what's your cap?
100%.
Really? You'd go that high? Yeah, I guess the downside, I mean, worst case scenario.
Worst case scenario scores, what? If he comes in 38th, he'll score like 5 fantasy points. So
yeah,
he can't go negative or anything.
Yeah, so yeah. So even to that
well,
extent.
Well, no, actually, let me adjust that a little bit because he'll finish at least 34th. Because there's no way that Gaulding, LaJoy, Earnhardt, or Hill finish this race.
Yeah, unless he blows up.
So
on
he'll
the
score at least like 12, which won't kill you.
Yeah, so could be a 100% play if that's your
Yeah, or just 0% and hope he blows up or something. But even then, like, it's not that big of a... It doesn't really help you too much.
I, to fade them in any situation.
Yeah, it does not seem smart. Anyway, moving right along, Ryan Newman starting 15th, or no, starting 13th, 7,200. Pretty damn good track history here. He's actually finished every race on the lead lap.
That's an interesting stat. I didn't know that. Not a whole lot of interest in Ryan Newman. He's been pretty good this year for by Ryan Newman standards.
He's just doing Ryan Newman things.
That's right.
Chilling in 13th place air race.
Yeah, and for that reason, I think he's... I don't have much interest in him.
But he's so cheap this week. He'd been the 8,000s, and he's 7,200.
Yeah, 7,200 is weird, but... Again, I'm just not seeing much from Ryan Newman that gets me excited about him this week. Good track history, but there's just a lot of other really good plays in this area that it's going to be hard for me to have significant exposure to him. But again, I talked about him in my midweek article as a guy that I was going to keep my eye on, and I'm going to stick to that. 23rd in first practice. We'll see how he does in second and third. But with Austin Dillon there, Kasey Kahne is kind of a question mark there, and a couple other drivers coming up that I have some interest in. Don't know how excited I'm going to get about Ryan Newman.
Ricky Stenhouse Jr. starting fourth, fade.
Yeah, probably a fade. Those cars don't have enough speed for him to stay up there, and they certainly don't have enough speed for him to dominate. And he got into the wall in qualifying, so they got to do some aerodynamic work on that car. So, fade.
Yep. Suarez starting 11th also seems like a fade.
Yeah, that's probably a fade. I might have a little exposure to Suarez just because, again, it's that whole thing of elite equipment at $6,900. But I think him getting a top 10 is kind of far-fetched at this point. But keep an eye on him in practice and keep an eye on how he does in the Xfinity race because there is some tough customers in that race. So we'll see how he does against those guys. But for the most part, he's going to be a fade, you know, to maybe 10% sprinkle.
Trevor Bayne, 6,800, starting 29th, fourth fastest in practice. Seems like it'll be everyone's favorite punt besides Dillon.
Yeah.
Easily.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I think he's probably the second best play in this area. That's kind of a decent track history here from, you know, in terms of Trevor Bayne things. And in 2017, he has 370 quality passes, which is among elite drivers.
He's been very good.
Yeah, that's really impressive. And starting 29th, that gives me confidence that he can move up the racetrack and pass some cars. So I like Trevor Bayne this week. I'm going to have pretty big exposure to him along with Dillon. But I don't think by any means he's a pivot off Dillon. I think Dillon is just an elite play at this range. But Trevor Bayne's a good complement to him, and I think Trevor Bayne's going to have a good week.
AJ Allmendinger starting 22nd, top 10 practice there, 6,700, which has pretty much been his price all year, outside of a few tracks, really middling track history here, but also a lead lap finisher, same as Bayne and Newman, I don't know.
Yeah, super excited about AJ Allmendinger, like I usually am on short tracks. This track is kind of in a different animal for him. I don't think his open wheel experience translates very well to Richmond. He's a good driver regardless. He has potential for a top 15, but he hasn't been able to do that since 2015 at Richmond. Back 2014, he had a sixth place finish, which if he did that this week, he'd be, you know, probably in the optimal, but I think the odds of that are low. Hasn't shown a whole lot so far this weekend outside of a 10th fast lap. That was kind of an outlier in his practice session. We'll talk about him more in the article tomorrow, I think. He's one of the guys I have pegged to talk about. But as of recording, I don't have a whole lot of interest in him.
Paul Menard starting 26th. Sixth fastest in practice. Kind of interesting. That's the second week in a row he's been doing that. And actually looked pretty good last week until he ran into some trouble. Seems like the actual pivot off of Bayne here.
Yeah, it could be. Paul Menard has just been punishing us all season. Good play, and then he does great for the first three quarters of a race, and then it all goes to hell. But seems like a good play, and if we're going by, you know, let's not play hunches. Let's play the statistics starting 26. That's a plus. Decent track history, middle of the road track history, not great, but enough to inspire some confidence. That's a plus. And having a pretty good year, fast in practice, all that stuff. There's some things to get excited about Paul Menard this week. It's just a matter of how much you're offended by being burned by him week after week after week.
I'll let him punish me for the rest of forever.
Yeah.
Chris Buescher started way too high, 23rd, so not really interested.
Really, really poor at this racetrack. It's probably his worst racetrack.
Eric Almirola, 6,200, still seems a little cheap for him. He's very good here.
Yeah.
Every year, pretty much. Every race.
Yeah, this is a guy who I think might be a little sneaky this week compared to Menard, Bain, Dylan, those other guys in that area. Kind of hope he practices poor the whole weekend because...
Oh, he always practices poor.
Yeah, and he races a lot better than he practices. So I think he's kind of a sneaky play in this area. Definitely going to have some exposure to him. And even if he doesn't practice well, I wouldn't let that scare you too much because he's got a weird knack for not being a great practicer, but just kind of a survivalist in the race. And he's a good race car driver, stays out of trouble for the most part. Decent play. And he finished fourth here 2 years ago. Last year, 20th place finishes, which is, if that's probably our worst case scenario, barring any incidents this year. So
that's 30 points. It's not bad.
Yeah, I like that. I like Almirola this week.
Ty Dillon, he started the season off with so much hype. I think that's faded a little bit. You've seen his ownership percentage go down. He doesn't have any track history here, but he has a lot of track history here in the Xfinity series, where I don't know how much to read into this exactly, but he had a second-place finish here last year and pretty much finishes in the top 10 every year, or every race they run here. Is it time to go back in on Ty Dillon, or is starting 24th just not good enough?
Yeah, it's a tough question. I think there's enough value in this area and this price range to not have to go super heavy on him this week, but I don't think it's a bad play to play him a bit. He's kind of got a knack for competing above his price level. It's just a matter of can he finish. I don't think he has the top 10 potential that some of these other guys do, so for that reason I'm kind of off him. But I do think he's probably going to be under-owned. Like you said, he's been trending downward, doesn't have a track history to go on, and hasn't looked particularly impressive the last couple of weeks if you're game log watching. So an interesting play that maybe we'll talk about more as the weekend progresses. But like I said, there's enough value here that you don't have to go out of your way to get Ty Dillon exposure, I don't think.
Someone that seems to have kind of fallen off a cliff a little bit this year, Danica Patrick at 6,000. Do you think we'll be seeing her in the 5,000s for the rest of the year?
Yeah, I think Danica's ship has sailed, kind of, which is a shame because I like Danica Patrick. She's a better driver than she gets credit for, but I think she's just lost, you know, that will to improve. It's just been such a struggle for her whole NASCAR career, which is really a shame. Because I think she's a lot better than she's been. But I think this is probably her last year in the sport. I think she knows that, at least the last year in that 10 car. And I think she knows that. I don't think the effort is where it has been in the past. And I think the results are going to show that for the rest of the season. So I'm going to fade her moving forward until I see something from her. But, you know, 2017 has just been abysmal for her. Cole Witt has more points than Danica Patrick, which is bizarre. TriStar, Stuart Haas Racing, it's insane. So I'm full fade on Patrick for the foreseeable future until something turns around in that camp.
Are you as tired as I am of being baited by David Ragan? Like, he always qualifies so bad, and he always looks like, oh, decent play, but his track history is just so deceptive. He's been on so many different teams. Is it time to admit that he just sucks and should be down with, like, the Reed Sorensens of the world?
That's a good question.
That's how I feel too.
I don't think he's Reed Sorensen bad. I think he's had a bad season for sure. But if you look at his teammate, Landon Castle, who's kind of a darling for fantasy in some ways, Castle's been just as bad. They both have not been able to produce at all in those front row motorsports machines. So I think it's more of a car problem. I don't think they kept up with the aerodynamic changes as well as some other teams in that area have. But yeah, I'm David Reagan has burned me a couple times this season. I'm getting tired of it. So I'm happy to fade him this week just because, again, it comes down to there's enough value this week to not have to reach for guys like that. 30th seems like a, you know, play him. 30th, what's the worst gonna happen? Well, the worst is going to happen. It's David Reagan, and it's happened all season. So I'm happy to fade him, but not mad at you if you play him a little bit because, you know, he's just so enticing, 5,900 at 30th with a above the scrub type equipment. But yeah, I'm not falling for it this week.
Absolutely not interested in Matt DiBlandadetto. Starting 32nd, 5,800. No. Never cracked the top 30 here in four tries.
Him, so I don't have to say his last name. But
it's
also
DiBenedetto.
DiBenedetto. I still don't think that Go Fast Racing team is enough speed to be consistently finishing above their qualifying position. So I haven't really bought into the Matt D hype, so to speak. And I'm going to stick with that for now until something changes. It's, I think a lot of people forget that it wasn't that long ago that Timmy Hill was in that car, and that 32 car was thought of as a super scrub that never finishes the race. We're not that far removed from that, and I don't think Matty is good enough to improve on that much. So I'm fading him kind of in the same way I'm fading Danica Patrick until something changes.
I can't. Landon Castle, starting 28th, does not inspire too much hope. I wish he was starting 35th or something like that. Kind of fast practice times, 20th fast, but
yeah, there's not enough variance at this track to make him attractive.
Exactly.
I don't see him getting much higher than 28th on race day.
What about Michael McDowell? 5,400, still really, really cheap for him. Came 12th here in this race last fall. Kind of interesting week to week. Like, I don't know why they never price him higher. Like, why is DiBenedetto 400 more? Why is Reagan 500 more? Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's weird. And I think we talked about this last week, but it almost seems like a mistake on your spreadsheet, but it's not. His quality passes are bizarre.
Oh, yeah.
He's got 250, which is on par with Matt Kenseth.
Yeah.
And in the same realm as some of those upper echelon guys. I mean, he's got more than Kevin Harvick. He has more quality passes than Kevin Harvick, albeit he's racing with lesser equipment most of the day. But still, it just shows how much above he is than those other, you know, 5,000 range drivers. Pretty fast in practice. He was second fast in 10 lap in that kind of abbreviated 10 lap first practice we saw. So his last performance in 16, where he finished 12th, inspires some confidence. He's been good this year, and at 5,400 starting 27th, if he can squeak out a top 20, that's good enough, I think. And I mean, if he can squeak out a 12th again, he's in the optimal for sure. So I like Michael McDowell this week, and those 5,400 guys tend to go a little under-owned just based because
No one wants to scroll that far on their phone.
That's right, and it just seems like, oh, these guys are so they can't be good. Let's ignore them. I don't think it's worthwhile to ignore Michael McDowell this week. I think we have to get some exposure to him.
Do you know who I really like? Maybe a lot of people like him after last week. He's been like better than like he's graduated. I think we're talking about Cole Witt here. 5,200. Mm-hmm. I think he's graduated from the Reed Sorensens and Jeffrey Earnhardts of the world. Finishing on the lead lap several times this year.
Yeah, Cole Witt.
Was in the optimal last week. Starting 36th. That looks really good.
Yeah, I agree. I'm going to have a lot of exposure to Colwitt, and I planned on it even before he qualified 36th. His last finishes 21st at Bristol, 30th at Texas, which was still enough to not kill you. 21st at Martinsville, finished 20th at Atlanta and 18th at Daytona. He's been finishing well more than he's been finishing poor, and for a new race car team like TriStar, that's really unusual, and I think we need to ride that train until it implodes. But again, like Michael McDowell, I think Colwitt we can't ignore him at 5,200 because, again, it's the kind of situation, if he finishes 25th, he's probably in the optimal. So definitely take a look at Colwitt this weekend.
And now it's time to play our favorite game called Not Interested. When I list a driver, you say either interested or not interested.
Okay.
Reed Sorensen.
Not interested.
Timmy Hill.
Not interested.
Jeffrey Earnhardt.
Say that one again.
Jeffrey Earnhardt.
Oh, yeah, no.
Not Dale Earnhardt.
No, not interested.
Well, I wouldn't be interested in Dale either. And Gray Galding, who hasn't finished a race this year.
Nobody with colors in their name, not interested.
Corey LaJoy.
Randy LaJoy or Corey LaJoy?
Corey LaJoy, who was also in the optimal last week.
Yeah, that was bizarre. He had a good race last week. But he's starting 34th this week.
Galding is starting 31st.
Yeah.
Why would anyone roster him?
Yeah, and it's the same with Corey LaJoy. Just there's not enough out of that camp to ever give me enough confidence to play either of them. So
that'll do it for the Taco Tuesday NASCAR DFS podcast.
Not interested.
Oh,
it's the one.
You're supposed to say very interested.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm not interested because I've already heard it.
Sorry, go ahead.
So if you would like to check out the VIP spreadsheet, the new Domination Station, which is an optimizer that is unlike any other NASCAR optimizer out there, you can identify exactly how many Dominators you want to have, you can identify, like you can say at least one Dominator, or no more than two Dominators, etc. See, it's the first NASCAR optimizer to include Dominators as part of the optimization process. If you want to check any of that out, and definitely come and check out Brady's articles that he will be putting out this week, come check out dfsarmy.com. Use promo code TACO on sign up, and Brady, tell him about the articles that you will be posting for the rest of the week.
Yeah, so you can go back and check the one I posted Thursday morning called the Competition Caution, I think. Yeah, it is. The Competition Caution just kind of is a primer for what to keep in the back of your head as you begin to research and investigate the weekend. Goes through the track and what we've seen in the past here at Richmond. Tomorrow after final practice, or maybe after the Xfinity race, because I'll probably want to keep my eye on that. But tomorrow evening, late afternoon, I'll drop the sway bar, which is kind of my concluded thoughts on the weekend. Kind of gives my favorite plays, some kinds of the guys I'm going to be off, the drivers that I think are great value plays. And I think we kind of covered that all today, but I'll kind of condense it all into a nice, neat little article. And then on Sunday morning, up until race time, I will be on the Slack forums, exclusive to the DFS Army community, and the subscribers to DFS Army can all go in there, and me and Taco will kind of chop it up with everyone and kind of tell everybody what we're doing and what we think of what you guys are doing. So definitely get signed up and join us Sunday morning. It's been a lot of fun every weekend there, and then we'll do it all again next week at Talladega.
Awesome. All right, well, see you guys later. You want to say a final goodbye? Just say goodbye.
I'll say goodbye. Tired. I'll say follow me on Twitter, Brady Miller, DFS. I post any updated thoughts for the most part as the weekend progresses on there, as well as the Slack forum. So Brady Miller, DFS on Twitter.
Hey, and I would be Taco DFS on Twitter, but I don't use it very much. All right, that'll do it. So, see you guys later. Have fun making lineups.
Thank you for listening to the DFS Army Podcast. Join the DFS Army today and gain access to our private Slack chat, where you can chat with real DFS pros and coaches, as well as other DFS Army members with winning track records. Also included in your membership is access to our premium articles, DFS Army weighted projections for every sport we offer, from NFL to MMA, weekly player picks and cheat sheets, the strategy vault of timeless concepts, and the DFS Army Domination Station, a truly state-of-the-art lineup optimizer offering your personal projections or ours. The DFS Army membership is the best value across the industry. Join today and get two free ebooks, as well as The Secrets to Unlocking a New Level to Your Game.